This week on the Vital Masculinity Podcast, we continue our discussion of philia, or friendship, by looking into how C.S. Lewis defines that and how he distinguishes it from companionship. In the last episode, we talked about Aristotle's three types of friendship. C.S. Lewis doesn't really consider Aristotle's first two types to be friendship. He calls them companionship. Whereas Aristotle's third type relates more to what C.S. Lewis considers to be friendship. Although I think he has his own distinctions as well. So that's what we're going to get into in this episode. Also, stay tuned because we'll have more episodes in the coming weeks about friendship, specifically how Aristotle, St. Thomas Aquinas, and others understand friendship. I think by looking at these different perspectives on friendship will give us a really deep and rich picture of what it looks like to be a good friend. So let's see what C.S. Lewis has to say about that.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? You are listening once again to the Vital Masculinity Podcast. My name is Stephen Sloyer, and I am joined, as always, by my dear friend, Mr. Brian Murphy. Brian, it has been a seemingly long week thus far. How are you holding up?
I'm doing okay. Honestly, I mean, it's a little stressful, but it's also somewhat of a relief because it's, you know, we're pretty much done. I mean, I guess we'll see what happens with the lawsuits and all that stuff. But I don't know. I just feel like a sense of relief. Like, you know, something's going to happen and I don't have to wait much longer, hopefully, to see that happen.
Well, for point of reference, this is the week, or I should even pinpoint that. This is 2 days after the 2020 election. And I know history will probably remember this as one of the most interesting, to say the least. And I am running on maybe 4 to 6 hours of sleep over the past, 72 hours. And I think this is my fourth large cup of coffee today. So it's certainly been intriguing. And I know that there's going to be a lot more to say on this at some point down the road. And, you know, in many ways, it kind of relates to a lot of the stuff we've talked about the virtues like justice and fortitude and things like that. But I would recommend listening to those episodes, and I would also recommend you listen to one of the episodes we released last week where we talked with Nick Jamel of Conversation of Our Generation, specifically about really just handling politics and political conversations virtuously. Because today we're going to build on one of the other episodes we released last week, which is the topic of friendship. And in particular, we're going to focus back in on C.S. Lewis and his second love, which is philia. So this is going to kind of build off of the Aristotelian concepts of friendship, which we discussed last week.
This is going to be the first of probably, I don't know, at least a few, perhaps a dozen. I mean, who knows how long this will go, but I guess we'll see. But when we talked last week about Aristotle's three types of friendship, we got to the third type, which was virtuous friendship. And that's really what we're going to be focusing on here, what C.S. Lewis is talking about in regards to friendship. And we're also going to have a lot more episodes with Cicero, with Aquinas, some other people, in their concepts and understanding of friendship. Because I think getting these different perspectives will help us really paint a picture of what it looks like to be a good, virtuous friend. It's something that we could give you a list of things, and certainly we'll have lists. But I think by getting these different perspectives and painting this picture and looking at it from different ways, we'll really get to see what it looks like to be a good friend. And then from there, we'll have more and more episodes on how to be a good friend and different things like that.
So let's kick it off by looking at a quote from C.S. Lewis on friendship. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, this is from the book The Four Loves, like most of the other things, right?
Yep.
Okay, cool. So C.S. Lewis says, "To the ancients, friendship seemed the happiest and most full human of all loves, the crown of life and the school of virtue. The modern world, in comparison, ignores it. We admit, of course, that besides a wife and family, a man needs a few friends, but the very tone of the admission and the sort of acquaintanceships which those who make it would describe as friendships show clearly that what they are talking about is has very little to do with the philia which Aristotle classified among the virtues, or that Emakitia on which Cicero wrote a book. And I think that's interesting because this is very similar to what we mentioned in the first episode where we brought up C.S. Lewis and how a lot of the definitions have changed from not even just the time of Aristotle and Cicero, but even from the time when C.S. Lewis was writing, where people will still say they have friends today, but it means something very different. And in many ways, it is very weak compared to the friends and the type of friends and really like the what friendship meant centuries and millennia ago.
And C.S. Lewis goes on to say, the first and most obvious answer that few value it is because few experience it. And I think that is certainly true today. People might say they have lots of friends, but they mean it in the social media sense, like, oh, I have 500 friends on Facebook or however many they have. It's like, no, I go out to drink with these people, on a weekly basis, or, we do this or that. But it's not really the virtuous friendship that Aristotle is talking about that we'll get into more in this episode about what C.S. Lewis is talking about, because the trouble is that in order to have these good, virtuous friendships, you first have to be virtuous. And that is something that's lacking today. And I think because of that, that's why we don't see that many of these types of friendship.
And it's very interesting because I think a lot of people nowadays view friendship almost kind of in the way that maybe if you were a kid in elementary or middle school viewed friendship, where, you developed relationships with people, with, boys that were in your class or with neighbors and things like that. And it was really kind of directly based on activities or just kind of like close proximity. But I think something that's in particularly important and is a very big distinction with what the ancients viewed it as is that they believed that friendship is important and it's something to revere because it does not merely derive from our base or natural instincts or passions or whatever. And in many ways, it makes it kind of like the least natural of loves, and not necessarily in a bad way, but it's something that doesn't necessarily come naturally. And it is in many ways the hallmark of a civilized man rather than a barbarian, because it is, I don't want to say on a higher level than other loves, but it is in many ways kind of a less passionate one, and thus one that kind of takes a little bit more effort.
And C.S. Lewis says that a man can theoretically get by without any close friends, which at face value, that kind of doesn't seem right. Because if you think about, for example, our project here at Vital Masculinity is to help men build close friendships, good friends, because it is such an important thing. But I think what C.S. Lewis means here is that a man can have people in his life that perhaps are friendships of utility or friendships of pleasure. You know, you have people that you enjoy hanging out with, or maybe they do favors for you. Maybe all of your relationships are like that. And those are certainly things that people need, but it's not to the level of what a virtuous friendship looks like. And I think in a way it's something that we long for. And if we don't even recognize what this type of friendship is, we can get by without it because we don't even know that it's something we need. We tend to fill it in with more friendships of pleasure or friendships of utility. And it's very sad because I think that that's what people tend to do more often today, because of this lack of virtue and this lack of understanding of what a virtuous and good friendship looks like.
Absolutely. And when you compare, philia with, say, affection or storge, as we were mentioning a couple episodes ago, storge affection is at a base level connected to your kind of emotion. It's not necessarily a very passionate or very strong emotion most of the time, but it's connected to your emotion. And Eros is another similar one because it's connected to the desire to procreate, or some may say lust as well. Well, on the other hand, friendship really is a rational and freely chosen relationship. And the reason why I believe we have this shift is in due part to Romanticism. And I believe that we've talked about Romanticism before, at least kind of in passing, and this may have been many episodes ago. My personal take on Romanticism is that it's done a lot of harm because it's changed the paradigm and the way people view the world, but it also is not entirely unfounded, and I think there can be some goodness and some beauty found in it. But nevertheless, the romanticism of the modern world, and really the past couple of centuries, this entire world, is one where we have the exaltation of emotion, and it has become all of these emotional just kind of outbursts that guide so much of things. And this is the reason why I believe friendship has failed, because when you're moving away from a rational life, you typically tend to move away from some of the things that go with it, like friendship, again, being a rational relationship.
On the other hand, we have naturalism, which is kind of exalted in our modern world away today. And you could also call it materialism or scientism or however you want to look at it. But it's basically reducing everything to instinct. You know, for example, the instinct to procreate. Well, that's why I should get married and have a wife. Or maybe that's why I shouldn't get married, because it's just an instinct and I should just follow it, whatever it is. And then I think that ties closely with emotion, too, because it tends to be like, okay, whatever I'm feeling like, that's the instinct I should follow. But they kind of balance each other, this romanticism and this naturalism. When you don't have this concept of something beyond just the material world, just your base nature, it's hard to see why you would want to have any friendships other than the ones that make you feel good or that provide some sort of utility.
I think another reason why we have the decline of friendship, and in particular male friendship or male bonds or just brotherhood in general, is also in many ways because of the modern push for inclusion and the modern push for, in many other ways, diversity. Because realistically, when you say that this man is my friend, you're saying that that man is not my friend, or you're saying that this is the in-group and that is the out-group. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being in an exclusive relationship with somebody, whether it's a friendship or whether it's, you know, in much more of a romantic sense of the word. But this push for inclusivity has also harmed people, because it has changed people's minds, where we don't want to develop these strong bonds because it is seen as a negative that we aren't being open to everybody. We aren't, you know, having everybody as our friend, and whether it's a Facebook friend or whether it's a real life friend, you know, it's still kind of the same sort of thing. And this is why, like, the collective hive mind does not necessarily value friendship, and why that it's, and in particular, I would say male friendship. And this is another reason why it's important to bring it back, to fight a lot of these values that are trying to be pushed onto men in the 21st century.
I know we love to hate on social media, so why not stop and hate on it a little bit more? Because I think that the point you make about friendship not being inclusive, that can be very explicit, but I think when it comes to social media, it tends to be a little bit more implicit, and maybe I'm confusing these two ideas that I have in my head, but it's, you know, so when you have a friendship group and you say, okay, these are my friends, you know who they are, and you know that, you know, someone else is probably not part of that group. But when you're on Facebook, it's not as obvious to you that, okay, I have, you know, 500, 1,000, 2,000, however many. Like, I knew someone that had 5,000, which I think is like the max number of friends. And the problem with that is like, okay, well, if everyone is my friend, if I don't exclude anyone, then what does it really mean to be a friend? Because, you know, there's no way that you can know 5,000 people. I heard some study a few years back where it's like you can only really have a even very distant relationship with maybe like 500 people. And, you know, remember information about that many people is difficult. So saying that you have 500 friends is a stretch for me, and I think for most people kind of realize how ridiculous that is. But I think just having that mindset, and because that's the way that we use social media, is like, okay, let's see how many friends I can get. You know, let's see how many friends I have. And it's really cheapening the understanding of what it means to be a friend. And I think it really muddies the waters, because then if you consider all these people to be your friend, then what does it really mean to be a friend? Does it just mean that I like their Facebook posts once in a while, and maybe they send me a message every 3 years? It's I don't know. That's my rant for the day.
Yeah, so with the concept of Dunbar's number, and say what you will about it, I think it is a very good kind of heuristic to view how many people we can have meaningful relationships with, and that is 250 people. And that's not necessarily saying you can have deep and meaningful friendships with 250 people. It's just kind of saying that you're able to maintain relationships with those people. So I certainly agree with you, Brian, that all of this social media, and maybe as I've grown older, it doesn't happen as much anymore. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, becoming an old fogey and don't use social media that much. But, you know, this push for just having the most number of friends or most number of comments or likes or whatever is totally crazy. I mean, and it's so funny how shallow it is. And there are so many people, especially including men, not necessarily especially men, but including men that fall for a lot of this because, I mean, let's be honest, social media is designed for that dopamine hit. But I think that this actually ties us into our next point, which kind of ties in C.S. Lewis and his conception of philia with our Aristotle episode and his idea of friendship. And that's actually that we believe C.S. Lewis would most likely classify the first two types of friendship that Aristotle listed, the friendships of utility and the friendships of pleasure, much more as companionship than friendship. And that's a very interesting distinction that I think is very worthwhile to dive into.
He kind of gives a few different examples. But I guess first off, he would say companionship is often called friendship. And many people, when they speak of their friends, only mean companions. So, I mean, companionship is still a good thing. It's not a bad thing. And you might say that the people that I know on Facebook are my companions. Maybe people that I see at a gym or as part of a club, maybe they're my companions. If I'm in the army or something like that, I might be part of a fire squad. Perhaps they're my companions, but there's a distinction here between people that maybe I hang out with on a somewhat regular basis or people that I somewhat keep in touch with and someone that's actually like a friend.
Yeah, and that's a very interesting point because kind of like what I was mentioning before, I think a lot of us kind of have this almost notion of friendship of proximity where you may have a lot of like work friends or school friends or, you know, even drinking buddies, which we kind of talked about in the last episode. But it's kind of, you know, while it is one of those either friendships of utility or friendships of pleasure, it is also something you fall into. It doesn't necessarily meet the criteria of this notion of friendship being a freely chosen rational relationship, because you don't choose your coworkers. You know, a lot of the time you don't, you know, you may or may not choose like the people you just go out and drink with, or at the very least it's at a very kind of surface and shallow level. Another good point I think that brings up is that friendship arises when two or more companions recognize that they care about something much more than a common issue. And this is, I think it's most easily seen when you're talking about friendships of utility and you're kind of moving beyond the one kind of glue that put them together. And that's as long as you're, you know, defining issue as something that is kind of worked out. But you could say the same thing with pleasure, where issue may be like the common almost glue, like going to the bar or, you know, playing soccer with somebody or working out with somebody and things like that. And I think in many ways, another way to view this in almost kind of an ephemeral, higher way is that it's, do these people see and care about the same truth? And that's how C.S. Lewis defines it. It's much more than just right action or common action, but it's much more about the right and common paradigm that is much more defining of actual friendship over just pure companionship.
I think in a lot of cases, these types of friendships tend to come about because, you know, you're, as C.S. Lewis would say, you might be a companion with someone. Maybe you're part of a club or some sort of group. Maybe you go to the gym. Perhaps you do some sort of activity that is common. And you have some quote-unquote friends that you meet at this thing, this activity, this group. And then, like you're saying here, you realize that there's something that you share in common that's beyond just this activity, this utility, this pleasure you're getting out of it. And at least in my experience, that tends to be how a companionship turns into a friendship, is when you see and recognize that you both desire something beyond just what is happening in the way that you've met each other, but you actually want to seek after higher things. And that's actually kind of how Stephen and I met, is we were part of a group, and you know, we were both engaged in the group and doing things as part of the group. And then we realized we wanted to start, we wanted to take the mission further beyond what that group was doing. We wanted to, you know, blog and write about things. And, you know, eventually we came to this project, Vital Masculinity. So you could say that that's part of how our relationship has grown. And I think that a lot of you guys can probably relate to that as well when you look at your own friendships.
That's a very, very good point. And I think that actually is a very good segue into just a couple, or a list, I should say, a couple of points on some signs or some ideals of a good friendship. And one of them is common ground, which is kind of like what you were mentioning with you and me, Brian, where, you know, we are in close proximity with each other as a part of this group. And we realized we shared a lot more common ground than other members of the group, and we shared basically this kind of similar paradigm, and that led us to begin, you know, exploring other facets of our relationship and, you know, things we could do together and stuff like that. And obviously, I would say another one is, you know, being comfortable with somebody and feeling at ease, kind of, I don't want to use the word authentic. I know Ryan Mickler of Order of Man doesn't like that word either. I'm not a big fan of it because it seems very almost new agey to me. But this kind of distills this notion that you can be, you can be relaxed around someone. I won't say the word true self, but this notion that you can be relaxed, that you're not on your guard, that you're not putting up airs, and you're not really necessarily pretending to be someone that you're not. And these are two the first very big signs of a good friendship that I think are, in many ways, the two biggest ones, and I would say most of our listeners would probably identify them with their friends as well from the get-go.
Yeah, I think you can see this most clearly when you look at things like politics today, where, especially with the contentious, polarized thing going on with the election, with, you know, whatever people are talking about, especially if you're someone that's conservative, it seems like you're almost afraid to, you know, okay, who's around me? Like, who's listening? Like, are they going to try to burn down my house if I say something that they perceive to be racist or whatever it is? And you know, if you're feeling like that around, like, usually you feel like that, you know, around new people, you're just a little more careful about the things you say. Whereas, when you're with your friend, if you're having that type of feeling, then I would suggest perhaps those people are not really your friends, or you need to develop that friendship. Whereas if you are really close friends with someone, you're not really walking on eggshells at any point in time.
And one of these aspects that does kind of derive out of being able to again, be yourself in a sense, I guess, is the notion that, you know, if you can be yourself and you know the other person as who they really are, it makes it a lot easier to encourage them and help them in either shared endeavors or their individual endeavors. And this is something that I would actually say is a very big difference with, say, maybe companions you may have at work. Because obviously, if you're on the same team with someone at work, or, you know, you're in the same like work group or whatever, you want to achieve a common objective, but it's not something you're freely choosing. You may only be doing it for the paycheck. You may be fully invested in the project, but you know, there's an aspect that's out of your control. In this case, you are actively choosing to, you know, have a relationship, have a connection with somebody, and you're doing it because, as we've kind of mentioned before, you're doing it because you love them, you care about them. And this is almost the like friendship of virtue sense that we were talking about in our Aristotle episode. You are doing it because, you know, you're doing all of this really because you care about the other person as they are and not something that you can derive from the relationship.
Another good sign of a good friendship is humility towards friends. And I think that what C.S. Lewis is talking about here, this type of humility leads us to be thankful for our friendship, because we recognize, we recognize that, you know, we're not perfect, our friends aren't perfect, and we're thankful for the good things that they bring into our lives. We're thankful, we recognize the virtue that they have, and we appreciate that, and we are thankful for how they spur us on, how we feel comfortable, and we share common ground. All these different things that we can recognize in our friendship is something that is humbling to each individual that's in the friendship, and something that we can collectively be thankful for because we share this together.
I think it's probably a good time to move on to some misconceptions, as we've done in a lot of our other series and episodes. And I think one of the first ones is interesting, because realistically, you don't see the rise of this misconception or distortion until maybe the past 4 decades or so. And it's the notion that friendship can be confused with eros, and that it is somehow unconsciously homosexual. And there's a funny hermeneutic that I've seen thrown around in some circles called the hermeneutic of gay suspicion, which is actually, in many ways, I think it's very true, to be honest. I mean, I think hermeneutics, in the most part, are much more accurate than other measures of judging things. But it's the notion that men are afraid to either develop male friendships or kind of be themselves around other men because they're afraid of being called gay. And I remember, the examples that I can think of are all basically me from middle school, when you kind of start getting these unconscious things, and, you know, like, you're a middle schooler, you're going to call each other names and things like that. But this certainly extends into adulthood too, and I think it's not that these men are put in uncompromising or compromising situations with other men. It's that they just don't want to open themselves up because it makes them seem either emotionally weak or fragile, which by kind of correlation in their minds or in reality associates them and their relationship with, you know, their friend as a homosexual one. And that's definitely a misconception. I think it's also very much a distortion, and homosexuality is in many ways a distortion of philia and not just a distortion of eros. And it is because you have this kind of twisted sense of relationship with other men, you know, at least when we're talking about men, since, again, most of the audience that we have is men, and we're talking about kind of male friendships and brotherhoods and things like that.
Yeah, there's two examples that come to mind when I think of this. It's and they're both from the Bible, and I think it's liberals that are liberal distortions, and I mean liberal in like the theological sense, that they're not liberal in the political sense. If you don't understand what that means, then go look it up. But anyways, the idea is they're changing the interpretation to fit their modern idea of what things should be. And I think of the two examples would be David and Jonathan. You know, they have like this close friendship. I think the Bible even says like their souls were knit together. And then you have Jesus and the apostle John. And, you know, people tried to claim like, oh, they were in a gay relationship, because it was the apostle that Jesus loved. And I think that C.S. Lewis too has two quotes here that kind of gets to the point here. And he says that those who cannot conceive friendship as a substantive love, but only as a disguise for eros, betray the fact that they have never had a friend. And later on, he says, kisses, tears, and embraces are not in themselves evidence of homosexuality. And I don't think most American men are going to, you know, give each other a kiss. Although in other societies, I think, for example, Spain, you would kiss someone on the cheek to like to welcome them or to, as a greeting. And I think really the point here is that we kind of see this with your comments on, like, especially with, like, middle school and immature kids, where it's like, oh, are you, you know, I'm not going to share my feelings with my friends because I'm not gay, or, you know, I'm not going to give my friends a hug because I'm not gay. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with men, you know, giving a hug to his friend, or a man, you know, sharing how he feels about something. Maybe even he's struggling with something. I don't know. Maybe his wife left him, or whatever it might be. And maybe his father died, and, you know, maybe he cries about that. Like, that's a human thing. So it's, I think if you have a close friend, if you share common ground, and like we were talking before, if you feel comfortable and at ease with someone, you're going to share how you're feeling with them, and you're going to share your appreciation for them.
And this is actually, I think, a very interesting point for another misconception, which is how friends kind of, I'll say, interact with each other. And C.S. Lewis uses the example of friends facing the problems side by side while lovers face problems face to face. And we'll talk about the latter in later episodes, which will honestly probably be months and months from now, considering all the content we have planned. But it's, I think this is very telling in another quote where he mentions that friends hardly ever talk about their friendship, where lovers are always basically talking to each other about their love. And I mean, I can vouch for this. Like, Brian, you and I never really talk about the quality of our friendship, while my wife and I will constantly talk about the quality of our relationship and things like that. And realistically, I think this is also just kind of a male thing, but I think this notion that, you know, men need to be in touch with their feelings as the only thing is incorrect, and in many ways it is kind of a attempt to make, you know, this distinction between friends and lovers kind of almost a little bit muddied. And maybe that came out wrong, but like this notion of side by side versus face to face, if it's just about getting in touch with your emotions and feeling things deeply or whatever, you know, certain people will say and certain groups will say, that's much more about, you know, trying to make a face-to-face relationship versus a side-by-side relationship, which is much more about solving an external problem, or even really an internal problem too, but solving a problem together and head-on, which is really one of these hallmarks of male friendship.
Yeah, a couple illustrations that come to mind for this one is we had an episode, I don't know, it must have been a few months back, where we were kind of talking about this, and you were saying, like, your wife was asking you, like, oh, well, how's Brian's girlfriend doing, like, or something like that. And sometimes, like, I'll go home and my mom will be like, oh, what are your roommates up to? And I'll be like, I have no idea. Like, why would I ask them that? I mean, maybe if they want to talk about it, like, but yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's sometimes, you know, we just want to be friends, and unless someone brings something up, you don't really talk about stuff as deeply as you would if it was a romantic relationship where you kind of want to share every little detail about everything that you're doing.
Absolutely. And I guess it's always difficult to talk about these because, you know, like, and Brian, I feel like you're probably going to say the same thing, but it's been hard, I think, growing up in the 21st century and trying to form strong male friendships, because it really does take two to tango. And it's difficult because a lot of men are either afraid to get into, like, actual friendships, actual, you know, like, brotherhoods in a sense. And it's also just that, you know, a lot of men really just are even trying to focus on companionships. So there's no real push from a lot of people, whether because that's how they grew up or that's, you know, what they were told or whatever it may be, to actually develop these friendships. And because it's a side-by-side thing, it really does take both sides to actively, you know, pull their weight, actively put in the effort to be able to, you know, accomplish anything, or even just, I guess, at the very least, keep the connection and keep that relationship alive.
So the next point is that eros is necessarily between two only, but two, far from being the necessary number of friendship, is not even the best. And so you can have two people who are friends. That's certainly a good friendship to have. But generally, when you have when you're friends with someone, you tend to start to form a friend group. And you know, when you have three, four people, those friends, you bring out different things in their each person that maybe you wouldn't see with just two by themselves. So it's kind of like it's a exponential. Maybe not exponential exactly, but there's just different aspects of people that that become better with multiple people in that relationship. Whereas in a romantic relationship where Eros is involved, you know, I know we have people today in modern relationships that supposedly you can be in a romantic relationship with multiple people, but I think you just look at that and you can see how many problems that causes. You know, people get jealous, people are, there's just all sorts of problems that go on there, and we'll probably get into that at some point in some other episode. But it's really, you know, traditionally speaking, looking at Eros, it's something between two people, and I think that we all kind of realize why that is, because it's very intimate, and when you bring someone else in, it tends to detract from that intimacy. Whereas with friendship, like we were saying, it's side by side, and so if you have a bunch of friends walking side by side, you know, you're kind of build up, you have a line that you're walking together in, whereas you can really only face one other person one-on-one with this type of face-to-face Eros relationship.
I absolutely love that analogy of, you know, kind of walking side by side in a line. And it actually kind of brings to mind like an illustration that gets us to our last misconception, which is this notion that, you know, friends are merely allies. And that's simply not true. I think a lot of men that may look at the state of modern male friendship, they may almost take a knee-jerk reaction and kind of harken back to almost like a Band of Brothers style friendship. Like I'm talking about the TV show, kind of what you see about, like, you know, World War II and companies and things like that. And the issue with that is I think it's very knee-jerk. And while, you know, obviously that is, those men had very strong connections and you would say many of them were friends, the issue is that, as C.S. Lewis says, the mark of perfect friendship is not that help will be given when the pinch comes, because of course it will, but that having been given, it makes no difference at all. So at the end of the day, friendship is just much more about being there to help somebody. It's that you're doing it, you're helping out in any case. And being an ally is able to prove friendship, but it's not the sole basis for it, because we have plenty of allies that may not be our friends, that may not have connections with us at all. There are people that are allies just for utility, really. And that's, I think, a very good example that just being a comrade with someone, just being a colleague, just being, you know, on the same side of a fight does not make them immediately your friend. It just makes them someone you're basically a companion with, or as Aristotle would say, someone you have a friendship of utility with.
It's good to have allies, but friends are, they're indispensable. They have so much more value than just an ally. It's something that's priceless, I guess you could say.
Absolutely. So let's move on to some distortions, or you could say problems, with philia. And this kind of harkens back to what we were talking about with distortions of storge in that episode a few weeks back. But the first one is kind of when you use the other person. I think that's a good way to put it. And it's more so than in just a friendship of utility. But I do feel like, and this kind of relates to another point we had written down, where you're manipulating or gaslighting the other person, but that people will enter into a friendship with you, or they will basically, you know, give you their trust, or you know, open their heart to you, whatever it may be, and you twist it, or you use it, or you misuse it, I guess you could say, you abuse it, whatever it may be, and you do it either for your own ends or for some kind of like sadistic pleasure. In many ways, you could say that you're on a different level. This person believes you're a friend and you believe they are either a companion or someone that you're just there to kind of abuse, or, you know, in many ways your relationship is just distorted.
Yeah, I think when you have a friendship that's one-sided like that, whether it's malicious or, you know, what if it's, you know, perhaps unintentional, it's it, if it is a good friendship, which I might question whether or not it is, I think it's in danger of devolving into a friendship of utility or something worse. So the next one we have on our list here is, I guess you could say, like a roadblock that might prevent you from having, from entering into friendships, from these types of good and virtuous friendships. And that's would be, you're avoiding these types of friendships because you want to keep your distance. And you might see this in like professional context or political capacity, where you don't want to have close friends because, you know, perhaps they might manipulate you or use your position of power and authority to their advantage. So, you know, you could have a good friend that wouldn't do that, but you might be afraid that they, you know, you're not sure who you can trust. And so you kind of just in general avoid that type of person. And that is, unfortunately, I think that's fairly common. You don't even have to be in a position of authority. I think you just see that with people who, you know, maybe they got hurt by a friend, or they, you know, just saw their parents' relationship or someone else, and they said, I don't want that to happen to me. So they kind of put up these walls and prevent themselves from actually entering into a virtuous friendship out of fear or some other reason.
And I think it's important to point out that while there may be people that do experience severe trauma with friendships, like, you know, anybody can with a relationship, I think a lot of people may kind of abuse that and use it as an excuse to be, I'll say, cowardly. You know, it's kind of the same excuse as avoiding, you know, asking a girl on a date or avoiding dating because you're afraid of doing it. You know, yeah, there are genuine reasons not to get into a romantic relationship with a woman. And, you know, because you may be working stuff out, you may have, you know, a lot of issues you have to deal with. And that's a legitimate reason. You know, obviously you don't want to bring these things into a relationship. But if you're just afraid to have close connections with people and you don't attempt it, yeah, you could blame it in part on upbringing or whatever it may be, but it still is kind of the same notion of, you know, it's like we told guys in our episodes on dating, just go ask the girl out, be strong, be courageous, be a man. You know, don't just sit back and kind of wait and be wishy-washy and hope. You actually need to take decisive and prudent action if you want to break out of whatever rut you may be in. And another distortion of philia is this notion of, you know, envying either close friends or different friends groups. And you'll see that this typically happens when someone may feel excluded and someone's on the outside. You know, they may see, like, you know, let's say you have a relationship. See, it's funny how the second I say that, my mind automatically assumes homosexual relationship. getting back to what we were talking about before. But realistically, you know, when I say relationship in this context, I mean friendship. When you have a friendship with somebody and you have a mutual friendship with a third party, but your friend is a closer friend with like the third party than they are with you, it's very easy to become envious of that a lot of the times. And, you know, if it's multiple people, you may use the terms like cliques. Sometimes you'll hear the term boys club or mutual admiration society thrown out. And this is really unfortunate because it is an imprudent and unjust way to be living. And unfortunately, when you do get a lot of envy about these things, and I certainly experienced this from time to time, in like middle school and early high school and those sorts of, I guess you could say, cliques that came out of it. But I think that it's important to make sure you put a check on this, because it definitely can lead to other and much more negative consequences that will ultimately destroy the friendship. Because at the end of the day, this kind of gets back to what you mentioned in our Aristotle episode, where these people are more focused on themselves and their own feelings, and in particular their negative feelings surrounding this, rather than their care for the other person as they are. And that's something I think that's important to point out, because it's very easy to kind of become so self-absorbed when you do feel slighted, whether it is an actual slight or not.
I think this is also something that you see feminists engaging in. It's one of my, I don't know, pet peeve isn't the right word. It's something that really frustrates me, because you look at like the Boy Scouts, or like, you know, think of like a gym where men go to work out, and you know, how many men's clubs still exist where, you know, feminists haven't come in and said, oh, you're discriminating against us and you need to let us in and break this up. And I don't know of any men's clubs around here, other than like, you know, specific, you know, maybe a bunch of my friends get together and meet up on a regular basis. But it's really frustrating to me, because like, I want to be able to go to the gym, for example, and work out and not have to worry about some woman being there and, you know, trying to show off her physique, or even just like with little boys growing up, being part of the Boy Scouts, you know, having women in there, infiltrating these, groups is, it changes the dynamic, because a bunch of men being together are going to act a lot differently than if even just one woman or one girl is in that group. So I think that that's, I mean, obviously not all the men at the gym or all of the boys in the Boy Scouts are all, you know, close friends, but I think just even in those instances, because of this type of envy, because this call for inclusion and rejection of excluding certain types of people it prevents men from forming these types of friendships, because if we're going to have these types of friendships, we need to be able to, I guess you could say, be in a safe space to grow these types of friendships.
I think this actually, that's a very good point. I think it relates very well to the next distortion, which is the notion that you're trying to be close friends with everyone. And I think that it relates, because I guess you could say in many ways there's a lot of reasons that people may want to try to be close friends with everyone. It could be personal insecurity and trying to fill your life with just other people so you don't need to deal with something. I think another reason, which is very negative and can be related to envy, is the notion that you want to be close friends with everyone. And when I say everyone, it could just be everyone in a certain group, not like everyone you meet from your shoe shiner, wow, your barber to, you know, your
I need a good shoe, you know,
barista to the grocer. I need a good shoe shiner as well. Although, to be fair, I've not worn shoes that need to be shined in ages because of the lockdowns. But so you know, this notion that you just need to be close friends with everyone in a certain group or whatever, and that can be because you may not trust them. You may want to keep tabs on people. You may want to, you know, make sure that people aren't doing things without you, and there's so many reasons for this, and we could list them all. Like, one of them would be fear of missing out. We've talked about that before, and I think if you use your brain, you can probably think of a lot of other ones. But there's a lot of reasons why it becomes a negative to try to be close friends with everyone, because I mean, at the end of the day, it's also just not realistic, because it takes time and effort to put into a relationship, and if you're trying to do this with every single person in your sphere, you're trying to bring more people into your orbit or whatever it may look like or whatever it may be, you're going to be burnt out. And if you have other things going on in life, it's just going to be impossible. So you always need to make sure you're going into these also with the right mindsets, like we talked about, with care for the other person. And you're entering friendships and you're having friends and you're being friends for a reason, and a good reason at that.
So we just talked about trying to be too inclusive, but there is a problem with trying to be too exclusive. If we think back to the example of the difference between Eros and philia, you know, Eros, for example, that is certainly exclusive. There's no inclusive. There shouldn't be any inclusivity going on there, but friends, you know, there is some opportunity for being inclusive, and I really hate that word because of how it's used today, but it has a meaning to it. And The problem here is if you become indifferent to outsiders, if you become insular, and we have a couple more points here that are related, if you become like an elitist, or if you form a pride of being part of this in-group, of part of being this friendship, because there might be other men out there that perhaps can become friends and part of your group. And so I think to a certain extent, there has to be a balance here. You need to be open to perhaps maybe this person, I can become friends with them. Maybe they can become part of my friends group. But it's more of I guess you could say, or at least the way that I'm thinking of it is it's kind of like a passive openness. It's not, it's not like a active, inclusiveness. Like we're not looking for every opportunity to include everyone, but we're not, also trying to exclude everyone, no matter who comes about. You know, we're being, a good word would be we're being discriminatory. We're being discerning. We're trying to prudently determine who would be a good friend, who can fit into our group, and perhaps who, by becoming part of this group, will actually destroy this group.
And this notion of, kind of being, I guess you could say, discriminatory or discerning. There is actually a chance that you could take it, too far in the other direction. And I like the word discerning because that kind of strikes me as prudent and strikes me as like the middle ground. Because I think that if you become too almost closed off, you can kind of start viewing yourselves as superior to others and like kind of, cultivate a sense of elitism. And obviously this is going to be a little more than like in groups or things like that. Like Brian, you and I don't believe we have any sort of elitism over anyone else just because of our friendship or things like that. But I think there's a very real tendency towards if the in-group becomes much more powerful or it is seen as something that is higher, more valuable, more, worthy, stronger, whatever it may be, than the out-group. And this can also lead to the notion of pride. Pride is another thing that could relate to this elitism. And we've talked about pride before, and we're going to be doing some deep dives into humility later on after these series and things like that. But C.S. Lewis mentions that a good group of friends is not a reward for our discrimination and good taste in finding one another out. It is the instrument by which God reveals to each the beauties of all the others. And I think that's a very good way to wrap up these distortions, because you see so much pride nowadays, and I think you do see it as well in certain cliques. I mean, I don't know what it is. I'm sure it's certainly much more of a girl than guy thing, but like this notion of like your team or your squad or like, I don't know what it's about. It's a weird social media term, I guess, that I'm just too out of the know.
The squad?
And yeah, there you go. yes, the squad. I mean, that is a prime example of it. And there's a very strong kind of atmosphere of superiority, of pride, of being known or being in these things or, what have you. And it does not scream, it does not strike me as something that is, you're really caring about the other person, you're just caring about being a part of a group rather than actively having a relationship with another person or other people within a certain group.
Yeah, I think that really ties back to the point that we were talking about earlier, where a sign of a good friendship has humility towards the group that you're a part of. And I guess humility also goes out to people that aren't your friends, because you recognize that, okay, yeah, I appreciate my friend group, but I also realize that, we're not the most amazing group in the world. We're not, we're still fallible people with imperfections and faults. And part of that is what makes being a good friend is recognizing and appreciating other people's faults. And I think that if you are a virtuous person, if you're part of a virtuous friendship, you're going to recognize that in regards to people that are not part of your friendship as well.
And I think that that is probably a great place to wrap this up. But we're going to be talking a lot more about friendship, including some episodes on how to be a good friend. And this is, of course, coming from two imperfect people and their imperfect friendship as well. But I think we'll be quoting enough people that are wiser than us, like Cicero and Aristotle and things like that. Did you have any last thoughts, Brian, before we wrap this up and sign off?
No, I mean, I enjoyed this episode. I have to say, the more that we talk about friendship, the more excited I am about this, probably because I realize how much I need to grow in friendship. And I've been enjoying studying this, and I hope that it's helpful for everyone else as well.
I agree. And I think in the times that we have right now, it is very important that we find and we stay close to brothers, and we do it for the right reasons. We do it out of prudence, out of virtue, out of, you know, love and respect and things like that, and not because we feel ourselves superior or whatever it may be. Definitely check out the two episodes we dropped last week on the Aristotelian version of friendship. And also, I think, very importantly, the interview we did with Nick, because, again, with everything going on in the world, it's very, very timely, and I think it matters more than ever, even though we recorded it like a week before the election. So, gents, we really appreciate you listening. We want you to go into our show notes, click on the link, join our newsletter, get an invite to our Discord server, check out our website, check out our journal there, listen to our other episodes. Please leave us a rating and review, all those fun things we always say, but really things that do help us out, particularly as, you know, as we continue to go on with this podcast and as we enter more than a year and a half of doing this, we always love getting any feedback, and it really, really does make a difference. So thank you again for listening. We hope you have a great rest of your week. And always remember, no matter what is happening in the outside world, virtue makes the man. Have a good one.